Physics World.
Hello, I'm Hamish Johnston, General Physics Editor of Physics World, and I would like to welcome you to the first Physics World Weekly podcast of 2019. I'm joined by my colleagues Susan Curtis and Mateen Durrani, and we're going to gaze into our crystal balls to see what 2019 will bring for the world of physics and related sciences. Hi, guys.
Hello, Hamish.
Hi, Hamish.
Now, Mateen, you're traditionally prognosticator in chief at Physics World, and I know you've been doing an annual sort of predictions article for quite some time, but we decided that we'd invite more colleagues to chip in. Presumably the idea is that, you know, it's a bit like throwing darts at a newspaper. One of us would get it right. Let's discuss some of those predictions. And I should say that those predictions are made in an article that's called What to Look Forward to in 2019, Physics World Editors Make Their Predictions. So I'm going to kick off this discussion by predicting that in 2019, this will be a very important year for the commercialization of quantum information technology. And this will be driven by a plethora of government initiatives. The EU, for example, has just launched its quantum flagship. And more recently, the US government has adopted the National Quantum Initiative Act, which will see $1.2 billion spent on developing quantum technologies over the next 5 years. Closer to home, and not to be outdone, the UK has launched a more modest program to fund quantum technologies. And even here in Bristol, and just across the road from where we're sitting, the university is creating a center for developing quantum technologies. So, Mateen, I think my optimism for all things quantum is reflected in the January issue of Physics World magazine. What do you have in there about quantum technologies?
That's right, Hamish. The January issue has a couple of articles about, as you mentioned, the burgeoning sector of quantum technology. And I should point out that, you know, you might think that, well, quantum technology is very familiar in physics, and it has supported industries like lasers, photovoltaics, and semiconductors. But if you like, those were kind of first-generation quantum tech. What we're now talking about are things that what are dubbed second generation. So they exploit uniquely quantum phenomena like superposition and entanglement. And there's one very good article in there that my colleague Margaret Harris has written, which is all about the problems that potentially might arise with quantum computers that if you can actually crack some of the codes that are used to create secure quantum keys. Also got a very good article by James McKenzie, who's Vice President for Business and Innovation at the Institute of Physics, and he's written about some of the areas that are likely to succeed and win out through these second-generation quantum tech areas. So that's two articles. And then there's a third article also about, an interview with someone at the University of Bristol all about the burgeoning areas and in quantum cryptography and communication. So three articles there to look out for that were also some of them appeared on our website in a Quantum Horizons collection. I should point out, Hamish, before I babble on too much, that actually the UK was at the forefront of this investing in quantum technology. And I know you said just now it was a more modest proposal. Peter Knight, who was a former president of the Institute of Physics, is very keen to point out, and he's talked to me several times, that the efforts that the UK are making are among the biggest in the world in this area. So I would challenge that your claim that they're more modest.
Well, thanks, Mateen. I'm always up for a challenge. Susan, you're off to Photonics West, which is a big conference in San Francisco next month. And, of course, photons, in some ways, are an ideal way of transmitting quantum information. So I'm guessing that you're expecting to be attending lots of sessions on quantum information at Photonics West.
That's right. As you say, optics is really important for a lot of quantum experiments. So I'm expecting there to be lots of talks on the science. But Photonics West as well has always had a very strong focus on commercialization of technology. And one of the sessions that really caught my eye, and I should definitely be going along to, is a session that's all about the new US Quantum Consortium. And this arose out of the out of the initiative that you mentioned earlier, that came out the National Strategic Overview for Quantum Information Science in the US. And what this consortium is aiming to do is to bring together researchers with private organizations to try to do pre-competitive research, to try and share knowledge and experience, to share resources as well. The new consortium, its new title is actually the Quantum Economic Development. So it's very much about creating technologies and commercial technologies from quantum information.
Because that's a really interesting thing, trend, isn't it? That there are lots and lots of spin-out companies, particularly from universities, in the quantum realm. So it'll be very interesting to see how those, the technologies developed by those companies pan out. Because I suppose at the moment there are competing technologies, aren't there? You've got linear optical quantum computing. You've got quantum computing that uses superconducting circuits as qubits, and then of course you've got ions that can be used as qubits in quantum computers. It's all very exciting. There's lots of different things being done. And it'll be very interesting to see how commercial pressures, if they can focus the quantum computing community on one particular technology.
Well, that's right. And I think the challenge is going to be converting all of this really exciting science into something that can be commercialized. And there's been lots of examples before of where that's proved difficult, like graphene, for example. So it'd be really interesting to see whether these large-scale initiatives, the one in the US, also the quantum flagship in the EU, can really make quantum technology a commercial viable product.
And while we're expecting to hear lots of noise from the quantum computing community in 2019, things may be a bit quiet from the Large Hadron Collider and CERN. And that's because the LHC has been shut down for an upgrade. This is a luminosity upgrade to increase the number of proton-proton collisions and hopefully allow physicists to, well, discover something. I don't know of any other way of putting it. Of course, the LHC has been very, very successful, both in discovering the Higgs boson a few years ago, and also in operating. Apparently, it's running very smoothly, running to plan, but unfortunately, it's not really finding any physics of real interest, or at least none that we've heard of, which is a bit disappointing. So hopefully, once this upgrade is complete in a few years, there'll be more collisions and more data, and maybe we'll see something really interesting out of the LHC. But of course, physicists are also looking forward towards the next collider and after the LHC. And one candidate is the International Linear Collider. Japan is, I suppose, a front runner for building that. But I've heard that the Japanese government, are they dithering on this? Does anybody heard any rumors about that?
I think the rumor is that they might decide in March whether to go ahead with funding it and building it. To host a facility of that size is, a big financial commitment. And that, when it comes to those kind of mega projects, you really need strong political support. And I think that's the key, whether the Japanese scientific community can get that support from the authorities, from the government, to host and act as the candidate site for such a huge facility. So my colleague Michael Banks says that March is when a decision might be made on that. So let's wait and see. Hopefully they'll say yes.
And there's other plans, of course. There's a plan to make an even bigger ring collider at CERN, which would go under Lake Geneva, and it would be a massive undertaking. Although I can just imagine how much money that's going to cost.
Well, that's going to be 100 kilometers in circumference, I think. Is that right? That would be a huge civil engineering project and a huge technological challenge to build that.
Yeah, and possibly on the back of no real results from the LHC. It's becoming maybe difficult to see what the motivation would be for building a bigger collider. I suppose the main motivation could be, well, we really haven't seen much with the LHC, so we're going to have to build an even bigger thing to see something. But I'm not sure if governments, as you say, or the public in general will be keen on that. So that's a really sticky wicket for particle physicists, unfortunately. But of course, accelerators aren't only used for particle physics. They're also used for medical applications. And Susan, you've got a prediction or observation for 2019 for medical physics.
Yeah, well, I have to be honest and say this isn't my prediction. This is from Tammy Freeman, who's the medical physics editor for Physics World. And as you say, accelerators that have been developed for particle physics have been reimagined for medical uses. And proton therapy in particular has become more and more popular around the world. And in 2018, the first patient was treated with high-energy proton therapy in the UK. It was the first UK treatment. And the first proton therapy centre to be established within the National Health Service here in the UK. So where it was opened was at the Christie in Manchester, and the Christie will be playing host to the 2019 meeting of the Particle Therapy Cooperative Group later this year in June. The other really interesting thing that's happening with proton therapy that Tammy mentioned is that is the use of imaging, so proton imaging, working alongside the therapy systems to really target the beam and deliver better treatments to patients. So that is really developing really quickly. And I think before the end of 2019, we will see that real-time imaging during treatment to improve the outcomes for patients.
So this is where a patient is, for example, in an MRI scanner, mm-hmm. while they're getting the proton therapy.
Exactly, exactly.
The success and the targeting can be monitored in real time.
And this kind of approach has been used with traditional radiotherapy before, but it's now coming online for these proton therapy instruments as well.
And Susan, wasn't our colleague James Dacey, wasn't he up at the Christie with his video camera making some films recently?
That's right, yes. Back in the autumn, James went up to the Christie and talked to a few of the professional people at the Christie. So there are several films now on the video channel, some of which are actually sort of explaining a bit more about what medical imaging is, what proton therapy is, the type of techniques that are used. And so anyone who's interested in it, I would encourage them to have a look on the video channel and take a look.
So do we have any important anniversaries coming up in 2019?
Yeah, there are a couple. So if I start off, one of the big things that's happening this year is that it's the International Year of the Periodic Table. And that is marking the 150th anniversary of the table's creation by Dmitry Mendeleev. And Martin, I think you've got something coming up in Physics World about that.
Yeah, our columnist Bob Kreese has written a great feature that's coming up in the February issue of Physics World, all about the history of the periodic table, which, as you said, Mendeleev created. Well, he drew the first one on the 17th of February, 1869, and Russia was still using their calendar. So it's the 1st of March in the European calendar. And that very first periodic table was very different to the one that we know and love today. And Bob Kreese, in his article, looks at how that table developed. I mean, there have been over 1,000 different versions of the table created over the years, and he looks into why the table that's familiar to us is the one that's stood the test of time. So yeah, it's a really interesting anniversary. And of course, that early table, it ordered elements by atomic weight, and it had a few gaps. And he was so confident, Mendeleev, in the table that he predicted the properties and the masses of these elements, and they were duly discovered. There were four, including gallium and technetium. So yeah, 150 years since that first hand-drawn table appeared.
And it's not the only chemistry-related anniversary. It's the 100th anniversary of IUPAC, which is the, I hope I get this right, the International Union of Pure and Applied Chemistry. Is that right?
Correct.
I think it's right. So that organization is celebrating its 100th anniversary. And there's a few events associated with both the periodic table and IUPAC. Things kick off on the 29th of January at UNESCO in Paris. That's the official launch of the International Year of the Periodic Table. And then later in the year, I think about halfway through 2019, IUPAC will be having a special meeting to celebrate their 100th anniversary.
And there's another anniversary, Hamish. This year is also the centenary of the International Astronomical Union, which has also got a year-long program of events around the world starting this month in January.
And I think one of the really big science stories in the first week of January 2019 was China landing a spacecraft on the far side of the moon, the first successful soft landing on the far side of the moon. That, of course, is the side of the moon that we can't see from Earth. And so any data or exchange of information between that lander and Earth is done via a satellite. And, you know, it was a really amazing accomplishment. And I think it shows how Chinese science has progressed with just an incredible rapidity over the last few years. I mean, I spend a lot of time looking at papers in high-quality physics journals. And one thing that I've noticed, I mean, probably just over the last couple of years, is how many of those papers now come from Chinese researchers working in China. I mean, it really is amazing. Mateen, you've been to China. You've been in China a few times.
Yeah, a couple of times. In fact, I've talked to the father figure, if you like, of the Chinese Lunar Project at the National Astronomical Observatories of China in Beijing, who's called Professor Ouyang Zhang. And they've got a real fascinating plan that's been going on for several years now to target the moon. Partly they started it off with this idea that they potentially might mine the moon for various elements there, including a controversial plan to mine helium there.
That's right, it's a helium-3 on the moon.
Yeah, there's been certain question marks over that project. But it's an ambitious thing, and they take it very seriously. And, you know, this landing on the far side of the moon was something we knew was going to happen. And, you know, it's great to see, and it got a lot of coverage. And, you know, I think they even want to send astronauts to the moon, which they haven't done before. Very ambitious program in China. And as you say, the whole of the scientific community in China is really burgeoning, and we've covered it a lot on Physics World over the last few years through various means. The quality of the science there is rising. The amount of projects they're building is just phenomenal. And certainly for us, here at IOP Publishing, I think almost a quarter of all the papers we publish in our journals are from Chinese scientists. So very big and burgeoning scientific community, which is great to see. And they're certainly taking more of a lead in terms of running projects and taking the initiative on setting new projects going, which traditionally they've been slightly weak on. The Chinese have been very good at following the lead of other countries, and now they're starting to get into that phase where they're in the driving seat. And they themselves have got a plan for a big collider in China, particle collider, which may get the go ahead. So yeah, a lot of promising stuff, a lot of exciting stuff going on there.
I mean, certainly in quantum information, China is has taken a lead, and also in condensed matter physics, and particularly topological materials, which I think was another one of our fields to watch out for in 2019. I notice, you know, there's a lot of really fantastic work being done by Chinese scientists about the topological states of matter. And of course, that feeds into to quantum computing and other technologies. So yeah, it is amazing. I mean, I suppose the only thing is, can China sustain this growth? I suppose that's a question, a general question with China. Can it sustain this incredible growth? And what sort of impacts will there be with the current trade war with the U.S., particularly if that impacts the exchange of science and scientific information. But yeah, it's definitely amazing the rise and rise of China in the world of physics. We're sitting in southwest England, and it's a lovely sunny winter's day. We haven't seen much of the sun this winter, but it's definitely nice and bright today. But unfortunately, here in the UK, there is the possibility of some fairly nasty storm clouds on the horizon. And that, of course, is Brexit, which will happen on the 29th of March. Brexit, of course, is relevant to physicists because a lot of researchers in the UK get money for being parts of EU research programs. And there's a very, very active exchange of physicists between the UK and the rest of the EU. And, you know, there are great worries that that could come to an end when Brexit happens. And, you know, there have been announcements made by British physicists that they're leaving the UK because of Brexit. The most recent one is the University of Edinburgh astronomer Catherine Haymans. She's announced that she's leaving the UK for Germany because of Brexit. And she's citing funding issues. Apparently, she gets about 90%, I think I've got that figure right, of her funding from EU sources, and she wants to maintain that funding. And so she's moving her research group, research program, to Germany. And she's not the first high-profile physicist to make the move. Cosmologist Peter Coles, he's a well-known blogger as well, he's in the process of leaving the University of Cardiff for Maynooth University in Ireland because of Brexit. And unfortunately, I think there are probably going to be more physicists who leave the UK because of this. So Mateen, Susan, have you heard any rumours about any more people who are leaving? Or do you have any thoughts in general on Brexit?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned those two people who have left the UK because of Brexit. I mean, scientific collaboration is always about people moving borders. So it's very hard to disentangle how much of an influence Brexit has had from just the general ebb and flow of people moving countries. And it may be several years before we actually find out the potential damage Brexit might cause to UK physics. I know for sure that about a quarter of all physics professorial staff at UK universities are EU nationals. So that's quite a high proportion. They've come here over the last 20 or so years. So it's a very high fraction of British physicists are EU nationals. So how that number changes over the next few years, you know, we'll have to wait to see before more data comes in rather than just relying on one or two cases. But certainly, anecdotally, as you say, there are people who are leaving because citing Brexit, and people maybe not taking up positions because of the uncertainty. So it's a very difficult time. We don't know how things will pan out. Uncertainties in the air for the rest of the year, I think, for international collaborations with the UK. I'm hoping that things carry on. I know most of the scientific community want to carry on collaborations with the rest of the EU and with the rest of the world. So nothing really has changed from that perspective. Whether impediments come in the way, we'll have to wait and see.
I mean, I think one thing that could be a problem is the recruitment of high-quality physicists from EU countries. Because, of course, now a top-notch physicist from Poland could receive a job offer from Cambridge University and turn up and start work the next day. And, you know, I suppose maybe even more importantly, their spouse or partner could also do that, and their children, without any worry about obtaining extra visas or work permits for spouses, etc. That, of course, will be gone after Brexit, as far as we can tell. And so you might think that Polish hotshot might decide to apply for a visa to the US or to Canada. If it's going to be the same amount of hassle, why not broaden their horizons and go to Australia rather than go to the UK? I'm just curious, you know, how many of these really good people came to the UK because it was easy, to do so. You know, I think the view in the UK is that, yes, of course, these people came here because we're great and it's a great place to work. But, you know, maybe there's a certain amount of convenience involved in some of that migration of top-notch people. And maybe they'll decide to go to the US after Brexit if they have to fill out the same forms.
Well, I remember last year doing an interview for the 30th anniversary issue of Physics World with Julia Higgins, who is president of the Institute of Physics and based at Imperial College London. And she remembers the days when Britain wasn't in the EU, and to bring people to this country, you needed visas and it was complicated. And obviously life has become a lot easier these days. And so her fear was we go back to the bad old days where exchanges with other countries do happen, it's just more complicated. And as soon as things become complicated, then, as you say, the default is to go somewhere where it's easier. On the plus side, I suppose, if you're trying to play devil's advocate, then maybe people in this country will have to pay more attention to the collaboration with other countries and put more effort into it. And if they put more effort into it, maybe the collaborations become deeper and more meaningful.
And the other thing, of course, is you know, something that few people talk about is whether UK physicists in Europe will start to return to the UK after Brexit, which is another issue. I mean, you know, you could think of a physicist at a university in Amsterdam who uses a facility in Germany. Now, if they have a residency permit in Amsterdam, are they going to be able to go over to Germany to work, or will they have to get a work permit to use a facility in Germany? We don't know. So it could suddenly become very complicated for, you know, even if a British scientist in Europe has some amount of paperwork sorted out, it could be a major hassle for them, and they might decide to come back to Britain or go to the US, etc. So it'll be very interesting to see how it affects the, you know, the many, you know, if you go to a facility in Europe, a major facility, you'll meet lots and lots of British scientists working there. And it'll be very interesting to see how their future pans out post-Brexit.
I mean, yeah, we don't quite know what will happen. And I suppose the annoying thing is no one really in the scientific community wanted Brexit to happen. It's not like this is a big thing that they wanted to see take place. It's a sort of thing that, as I say, most physicists weren't keen on happening, and now they have to deal with the consequences. It may not be as bad as we think, but it's something that probably they could have quite happily done without.
Well, we'll see. We've got a major vote, don't we, in the British Parliament a week today, I believe, and then on the 29th of March, we'll probably know more.
Or not.
That's it for our predictions, and now we can talk with a bit more certainty about what's coming up in Physics World in 2019. Mateen, I understand you've got a few special issues planned. Something about Hollywood?
Yeah, later in the year, I think in November, we've got a special issue about physics and the movies. So that should be fun, all about various films that feature physics, people who are involved in the film industry. So yeah, keep an eye out for that. That's in November. And in July, we've got a special issue all about physics in the automotive industry. So that could range from new batteries or new kinds of engine and new energy saving techniques. And we've also got our eyes on potentially doing a feature about the physics of Formula One cars. And I know Sarah Tesh, our features editor, is very keen to get behind the wheel and meet some scientists who are involved in new car design in Formula One.
So it'll be Physics World does Top Gear then?
Something like that, but without the usual people involved in that program.
I mean, Hollywood is really interesting because there are a few LA-based physicists, aren't there, who do consulting work on films. I think Sean Carroll, the cosmologist, and Clifford Johnson as well, who is a theoretical physics, a physicist. I think both of them have done consulting work on films. So, yeah, looking forward to that feature.
Yeah, so we'll hopefully do a little bit about that, about the role of scientific consultancy to Hollywood films. You know, they're always criticised for getting the science wrong or mangling the science. But, you know, there have been some success stories and some do it better than others. So, yeah, we'll be looking into that.
On the podcast front, January's issue of Physics World Stories is about small-scale approaches to fusion power. Physics World Stories is our monthly podcast, and this particular episode will be number 3 in a special 30th anniversary of Physics World series. The February episode of Physics World Stories will be about superconductivity, and in March, we're going to be celebrating the 30th anniversary of the World Wide Web by looking at how fiber optics drives the internet. That's all for this episode of the Physics World Weekly podcast. Thanks for listening, and you can find all the articles we've talked about at physicsworld.com. If you enjoy what you hear, then you can subscribe via the Apple Podcast app or your preferred podcast host. Goodbye. Physics World.